One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
I am George Knapp, listening to That UFO Podcast and having one hell of a good time.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. Joining me again on the podcast, always a pleasure to welcome the Executive Director of the Paradigm Research Group, a political activist, researcher, and disclosure advocate, Mr. Stephen Bassett. Steve, welcome back.
It's good to be with you, Andy.
Good to have you on. And I was just saying before we hit record, Steve, that we last spoke just before the Schumer-Rounds Amendment, or UAP Disclosure Act, was voted down pretty much when it came to being included in the NDAA. Mainly those two really big important areas we discussed, the Presidential Review Board and the Eminent Domain Clause. Disappointing for many, not completely unexpected. And I wonder, can we start there and let's get your take on what happened at the time and where you think this can go if indeed it can be brought back round?
First of all, it wasn't expected. I didn't think that they would be stupid enough to throw a Hail Mary pass like that. The truth embargo is collapsing, the dam's breaking, and they're standing down there in the riverbed going, "Oh no, let's not now. Let's you know, get up there and see if you can super glue it together or something." I just didn't expect it, but they did it. All right. So what we have now is an extraordinarily interesting moment in history, complex as most of the great moments are. And I and my colleagues are trying to follow this as closely as possible. Danny Sheehan, who just recently founded the New Paradigm Institute, which he's been wanting to do for some time. It is a 501c3 think tank, already has substantial funding, but intends to get much, much more funding, with a lot of staff and legal support and everything else, all the things that you need to be relevant in the post-disclosure world, which is why it's been created. He's engaging a lot of people on Capitol Hill in various ways and working with witnesses and things like that. So he's extremely knowledgeable, but limited in what he can say. But I have a sense of what's going on. It is really interesting. One, the truth embargo is essentially, I'll put it this way, the truth embargo is technically over. One person after another is coming forward and saying there's a non-human presence, which is the current phrase for extraterrestrial, because extraterrestrial is still a little too much. I get it. It's okay. But non-humans that can fly around in very, very high technology, that's just not trivial. That's extraterrestrial. They're star to star, and until I get a huge amount of evidence otherwise, that's what they are. So recently, give you an example. Recently in a hearing involving the DOD, I think it was the head of the Department of Energy in the U.S., I think it was Tim Burchett, got into a pretty serious kind of back and forth in which he was bringing up to this individual the matter of our nuclear weapons being shut down. Now, I have yet to see the video, but I have a sense of it. I'm sure the head of the Department of Energy did not want that question asked, did not want to deal with that question. So I'm not sure, but I think based upon what I've heard from a second source, is that in answering the question, the DOD guy kind of confirmed that there's something there, right? Whether he confirmed that, they shut our nuclear weapons down, I kind of doubt that. So that happened. Then a very substantial individual, Colonel Carl Nell, who has a huge background, both in the military as well as in civilian contractor work, multiple programs. I mean, it's a mile long. He was asked to fill in for David Grush, of all people, at a significant conference in New York called the SALT Conference. Now, this is not a UAP event. This is a conference that's held every year for people in the high-tech industry and other industries, high-level people, significant people, people with substantial resources, and they bring in interesting speakers. They want to bring in David Grush, who would be very interesting, but David canceled, I think, at the last minute. I don't know why. I haven't heard why. I am aware, though, that he does continue to get the odd death threat, and so that could have been the reason. We're not there yet. It's still a difficult path we're on. And so Carl Nell agreed to fill in. So he comes in. And you can find this on the internet. I would share it with you, but I've been having trouble sharing videos on StreamYard and some of the others, and I've got to figure out what's going on, but it's just not working. And I will be happy to send you that link if you want to edit it into the record of this, and I will send you that interview. What's extraordinary is that it was clear that it was set up in a sense, meaning that there was a certain question that was going to be asked by the interviewer, and he was prepared to give an answer. And the question and the way it began is the interviewer basically said, first, please, why don't you give us your background so that our audience will know whether to care about what you're going to say. That's a very interesting interview. I never heard anybody interviewed like that. I mean, opening like that. And then Colonel Nell proceeded to go through his entire background, pretty much every major position he had. It was a substantial list. That never happens. You never have somebody go in and sit down with somebody in an interview in almost any context and go through their background resume in that kind of detail. It's awkward. And yet, I know exactly why he did it, and I'm glad he did it. He went through all of that so that people would understand what he was going to say next was serious. And then the next question was immediate. What is it that makes you feel that there is, I think actually the question was, do you believe, or conclusion, there is this presence, this ET presence, or extraterrestrial non-human? And he basically says, absolutely. And he says, do you have any doubt about that? He says, no doubt, and looks into the camera. No doubt that they have been, they are here and have been here, and that people, unelected people in our government, have known about this for some time. And so essentially, a whole lot of pretty high level business people, significant people in the computer world and the online world, and that are involved in businesses related to that, just heard a pretty substantial individual tell him, like so many others have recently, including members of Congress, that there's non-human presence here. We have non-human tech here. That's what just happened. And then Burchett basically challenges the head of the Department of Energy. So it's getting to the point where there's almost nobody in town in DC that hasn't come out and said, yeah, there's an extraterrestrial beer. There's a non-human presence here. We have non-human tech. So that is the situation in one perspective. But in terms of the political dynamics going forward and the Department of Defense, it's still hanging fire. So, and the reason for that is that the Schumer bill, it wasn't an amendment, it was an actual act, the Schumer Act, which was called the UAP Disclosure Act. Thank you, Senator Schumer. Which contained the UAP disclosure, control disclosure plan, thank you again, Senator Schumer, was a bold move that he might have held off on, but David Grush's testimony before the House Oversight Subcommittee, which followed, of course, his interview with Ross Coulthart and the debrief article by Kane and Blumenthal, he created an enormous problem for everybody, the White House, the Congress, the Intel Committee, and the DOD. What do you do, right? Because unfortunately for them, the old secondhand information thing, which they threw out there, and also the attack from Sean Kirkpatrick against him right away, because Sean Kirkpatrick was put in a terrible position by his announcement, his statements. That wasn't going to hold up. And the reason it was going to hold up is that Grush, it wasn't speculated, that Grush had brought this information forward to, I think, the Intel committee, staff, whatever, received a lot of problems because of that, went to the Inspector General of the intelligence community, the IG, very important person, Monheim, was represented by the former Inspector General McCullough, and it was properly received. They acknowledged that this was an issue and that they would address it, meaning we're going to inform people that they are not to do that to you. Now, the only way that is going to happen is if the information that he provided to the Inspector General of the intelligence community was validated. In other words, they're not going to give him relief and acknowledge that there's an issue here if he's given the Intel Committee baloney or unsubstantiated stuff. You know, we're not going to do that. In fact, what you would do is probably indict him or court-martial him for that. But so essentially, they must have confirmed. Now, the Inspector General of the intelligence community has a very high level of clearance. And so I am going to put it out there. I haven't got confirmation, and I may not be able to get confirmation, that the Inspector General's office went directly to the USAP source that gave the information to Grush in the first place to get confirmation and got that confirmation. I mean, Grush had gotten confirmation from other contacts in the intel world that had probably the appropriate clearance, who said, oh yeah, that information is true. That's still secondhand. But I have to think the Inspector General's office went to the source. And I think the people in the know that. And so essentially, Grush was rock solid and still is rock solid and still getting threats, which he wouldn't be getting if he concocted some story or had an unsubstantiated story. And so the situation, therefore, is pretty far along. But nevertheless, it was premature. There was a process underway that was leading towards a major hearing in front of the Intel Committee. The House Oversight Subcommittee hearing was important, but it just was not the level of hearing with the scope of witnesses that would allow disclosure to take place, meaning set the stage for the president to come out. But it certainly shook the trees. And so the question is, who was going to respond? Kirkpatrick responded by attacking Grush. Mistake. Some of the skeptics out there immediately said, see, we told you so. Mistake. So what's the president going to do? Can't do anything. The president cannot get into this. The moment the president gets into this, it's instantly politicized without having the preparation of a major worldwide watched hearing in front of the right committee, which is the Intel Committee. And so Senator Schumer made the decision that I'll deal with this. And what did he do? What he did was say, okay, we've had three tranches of legislation. Let's go ahead and finish the job. And so he works with Mike Rounds and some staffers, and he puts together a 63-page bill or act that would go in, again, to the NDAA, like the previous two. The first one went into the COVID relief bill. Now, that's the National Defense Authorization Act. This is a major, major act. It's one of the most important bills passed. And so when you put it, two things happen when you put it into a bill like that. One, it's a little harder to just dismiss it, right? Because if you don't resolve it, then the NDA can't get passed. So you got to resolve that bill in order to pass the NDA, which has to pass. And so that's a fact. But it also gives it much more gravitas, right? In other words, this isn't some standalone vanity bill being put in by a senator that wants to get attention. It's being put in the National Defense Authorization Act, and it's regarding unidentified flying objects. It's non-human tech, which it refers to at least 25 times. That was reduced to two. But in any event, this is a major deal. And the bill essentially is the final package. It's it. It's what everything we had to have and needed to have in order for disclosure to take place. Because we already have an entity called Aero that is set up to address this issue and always necessary. The NASA had already indicated they're investigating UFOs again or whatever. So that they're kind of in place. A very large number of members of Congress have been briefed. Probably figured out, oh yeah, this is true. What are we going to do? Pretty much everything was there except the final legislation that would allow for all of this information to come to the American people and the world. And he wrote it up, the whole thing. And so the disclosure, control disclosure plan was everything that was needed. It essentially covered everything that's in the government files, everything that's happening in the government system. Research, classified, USAP programs, you name it. ET bodies, wherever the hell they are. The whole enchilada. 77 years of accumulated material files, secret files, and programs, and the history of programs, would come out through a process of review in which whatever could be moved forward right away gets moved forward right away. And by the way, the bill stated that anything over 25 years would kind of get first shot, right? So that would kind of be coming forward immediately for review, which includes all the way back to Roswell.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to COSI. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to COSI starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at COSI.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
And it would and anything that was up for review would either be held back for a while with understanding, declaration. In other words, yeah, we're holding this back, or move forward. And so you'd have this process going like this that would take years. I don't think it would take that many years, 2, 3, 4. And pretty much everything would be out. The only thing that might be left would be so, so sensitive that for sources and methods reasons or something. But by and large, it could virtually all be out. And more importantly, they put the powers in the legislation to ensure that it happens, literally meaning that anybody in the chain of ownership of a record or a document or working in a classified program that didn't want to cooperate, they were going to have a very bad time. Their life was not going to get better. So the powers were there. And what were those powers? One, and this is the big one, subpoena power. that certain committees were going to have the subpoena power to subpoena anybody, anybody in the entire world of classified, secret, UAP-related, non-human-related tech and history, anybody. Secondly, there would be the highest level of classification given to a presidential review board or a UAP review board that was going to be appointed by another panel that's essentially operating out of the White House. And then certain members of certain key committees would also get the highest level of clearance. Now, what does that mean? If your clearance is high enough, you can penetrate the unacknowledged special access programs. I mean, they're unacknowledged. You're not supposed to acknowledge them. And that makes them much more harder to find. We get that. We know that. Does that mean that you can't find them? Does that mean that literally they're so secret that nobody? No, it doesn't mean that. It means that the president, for instance, if the president wanted, the president could challenge, go into, demand information from any unacknowledged special access program. And if they didn't cooperate, that program would be in deep trouble and a lot of people would be facing jail time. And if there was some UAP out there that was actually so secret, nobody knew about it, and it decided to remain secret, kind of like a separate thing, you know, off to the site, a world unto its own, and nobody knows about it, eventually it would be found out and everybody would go to jail. And so they were giving that level of classification. And in addition to that, he included as a real, how would you say, motivator for a response, a eminent domain. And this, of course, was for me the most significant thing in the bill for several reasons. When Chuck Schumer stated on July the 14th, I'm putting eminent domain on that ET tech or on human tech that Grush has confirmed we have, he literally sent shockwaves out to a lot of directions. First of all, he confirms that Grush was telling the truth. In other words, he's saying, yeah, trust, he's telling the truth. If there's no non-human tech, if that's all made up or it's a mistake, we don't need eminent domain for it. It doesn't exist. And so by saying we want eminent domain over that, the ability to exercise eminent domain legislatively, he's confirming there's non-human tech. He's confirming Grush and backing him up. And then he's sending a message to the civilian contractors who he and many other know have been given a significant amount of the research and engagement of this technology, probably even the engagement of bodies, because I'm sure they've done research on those bodies, in the civilian sector. Not the government sector. I mean, there's a government sector as well, but you don't exercise eminent domain over government, you know, programs or substance. You do it in the civilian world. And so he sent a message to the contractors. Look, we know you've got it. The contractors know that the government knows that they're doing that work, but he just announced it to the world. He's telling the world, we know they've got it. And consequently, we are prepared to exercise eminent domain. That really shook up the troops. All right. And so you've got subpoena power. You've got a high level of classification. You've got the eminent domain. And I think we'll include, in terms of the powers that bill had, the UAP review board, which is very significant and comes under the president. So that's a very significant thing. So these four things were in the bill, and it describes how the things are going to come forward and what would be done. It's the whole thing. And so if that bill is signed, it goes into effect immediately. And the process of that information coming out will begin. And everybody will be on fire around the world waiting to see what it's going to be. However, the very signing of the act continues to confirm that this is real and has always been real. And as a result, it makes it even easier for the Senate Intel Committee. It would have made it far easier for the Senate Intel Committee to move forward and hold the hearing, that there are many witnesses ready to testify. Witnesses like David Grush with information that the world will watch, I'm sure, in great numbers, that simply destroys the truth embargo publicly and ends it in that sense. In which case, the president can come forward and acknowledge this non-human technology and non-human presence. That's disclosure, capital D. That's the biggest event in human history, as far as I'm concerned. Regardless of who it is, it's not because it's our president, it's because of what he's going to say, and we enter the post-disclosure world. And of course, the act is in place, everything is there, and so you can expect things to be going forward rather briskly. But the bill was gutted. And that is something that I think was anticipated. I think that Senator Schumer may have put the eminent domain in there, knowing full well that that was going to really upset some people, and it could be used as a bargaining chip, meaning we'll take that out, but we keep the subpoena power and the review board and so forth. But they got bold, because I think they're really scared. And they do see the potential for losing huge sums of money if any proprietor or proprietorship or patents that they had planned don't turn out. They moved aggressively to take all the powers out of the bill. They were wise enough not to try to kill the whole bill. So they took the powers out of the bill and felt good about themselves. But unfortunately for them, this isn't 1969. It's 2024 now. They took it out in 2023, end of the year, but still. And yeah. Instantly, it was a problem. Why? One, they forgot that since 1969, a vast global communications network has virtually formed, right? Which includes massive amount of technology on the terrestrially, and then you've got technology in orbit, and the effect of that is linking the entire world together in a thing called the internet. And the internet has given birth to all kinds of what we'll call citizen journalism, citizen research, citizen everything, which includes all the websites, all the social media, and now the podcast revolution, which I know you're familiar with. And so that whole that network just seized on this act by the defense contractors and certain members of Congress and ripped it to pieces overnight. And they're still ripping it to pieces. That didn't go well. And then the second thing that happened is Senator Schumer went back into the Senate chamber along with Mike Rounds and read into the record a brief statement which basically said, oh, we're not done. We're going to continue. We're going to get this. We're going to push on this. We're not done. And so the defense contractors and those in Congress that serve their desires probably went, wait a minute, this is not working out like we thought it would. And what had happened is in the chess game that was being played, Schumer forced them to make a move, a bad move that set them up for checkmate. And I think they understood that. My God, it's mate and two. We're screwed. All right. And so that's kind of what unfolded because of the bill. And then what happened next, and I'm just trying to give an overview of how complicated this is and how it's gotten pretty much somewhat political. What they decided to do was a last-ditch effort to try to end it all, meaning we're going to stop this. And they were using 1969 as their playbook. When the United States government convinced a professor at the University of Colorado to sign off on a report called the Condon Report, Edward Condon, which completely lied and said that, no, there's really nothing to this. The evidence is not there. There's nothing to be concerned about. Then the government then used that as the basis to shut down Blue Book, which was creating a lot of problems for him, particularly since Alan Hynek was starting to realize, wait a minute, this whole thing is bogus. At least the effort, it's not real. And probably was becoming increasingly aware the phenomenon was actually what others had been saying. They shut down Blue Book. They wiped out NICAP, which is a significant organization, and then were very satisfied. And they got a break for years. Things were pretty slow. They shut it down. 1969. They said, "We're gonna do that. We're gonna do it again." And so, to their great disgrace, they convinced Sean Kirkpatrick, who was in a very impossible position, shepherding the Arrow. The All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office for that year and a half was not a fun gig for him because he's in the middle of a very significant thing going on and in no position really to deal with what could come up, particularly a David Grush. And so he's resigned. He wants to leave. But before he leaves, they convince him, you sign off on the new Condon report. it's a study we're going to put out that says, oh, here's what Arrow has found. There's nothing there. All of this stuff is no big deal, et cetera. And then the press will back off and the Congress will back off and the social media will go, well, I guess we were wrong. No, but they did it. They put this study out. And it is an absolute disgrace. And the DOD has disgraced itself many times in very bad ways, oftentimes resulting in the deaths of lots and lots of people. But in some respects, this is unique. It's a disgrace that I couldn't imagine they would do. But they did it, and they published this report. Now, since then, okay, the internet has just ripped it to pieces, okay? The media is coming back. Colonel Nell goes in front of the SALT group and says, oh, yeah, no, they're here. Burchett is still challenging the issue in Congress. And so the thing is just blowing up in their face. And so that's a good thing. But here is the other thing going on that is making finishing this race, winning this prize difficult. It's always been difficult, and it was never going to really get easy as we got close to the finish line, is that all of this, the one thing they have achieved through this nonsense, right, attacking Grush, putting out this stupid report, is they've pushed this hearing that we desperately need from the Intel Committee into the political arena, into the political campaign itself. We're now so close to the election that every single person in Washington, I don't care what they're doing, whether they would decide to water their lawn on a certain day, go to a certain restaurant, take a vacation, everything they do, they factor, will this help my candidate or hurt my candidate? All right, because the election's coming up. And guess what? Holding what would be probably the most important hearing in the history of the U.S. Congress, watched possibly by more people than any other hearing at any time, is a big deal. And the person that needs to call that hearing is Senator Warner, a good man, smart man, great experience, but a Democrat. And so he's having to make a decision. If I call this hearing, which will be nonpartisan in the sense that the issue is totally nonpartisan, it will be dealt in a bipartisan way by the members of the Senate Intel Committee, all 17. They've been very clear about that. There's been no partisanship shown at all in a time when partisanship is practically everywhere. But if I call this hearing, it's going to shake things up. And it might cost my candidate the White House. Now, does that mean it's the right thing to do to not call that hearing? Absolutely not. The right thing to do is to call that hearing. I have zero doubt about that. And history will be emphatic about that. Whatever happens in November, whatever happens next year, which includes escalation of war around the world, which right now is on the brink. I mean, it's like pre-World War I, pre-World War II. You're seeing everything that was happening in those eras happening right now, one thing after another. It's like they got a playbook. You know, it's the World War I playbook, 1916, 17. It's the World War II playbook, 1935 to 1942. It's that playbook. Oh, so we're going to do this, this, and this. You're just seeing it coming at us. And World War III will be nuclear. Everybody knows that. So we're staring that down. And so whether it's in a post-nuclear era or in an era where the threat of nuclear war has got even worse and everybody's scared to death, history is going to look back on this decision that Senator Warner is considering. And if he doesn't hold this hearing, they're going to look back and say, you had the right thing to do, you didn't do it, and you are partially, if not significantly, responsible for all the hell that is happening now. And there is a time in every democracy, particularly democracies, as far as dictatorships, I don't want to speak about them because they do whatever the hell they want and they screw things up all the time and they're awful and they're evil and we need less of them. The point is, a democracy, when you have to choose to do the right thing or the political thing, and I don't think there's ever been an instance in the history of this country when a decision was more clearly marked between right and political than calling the hearing in the Senate Intelligence Committee for the it able to pick from scores of witnesses to choose the absolute best ones. And so that is where we are, as we are now, I don't know, 8 days away from the first presidential debate, right, in which there is already activism out there calling for questions about the non-human tech to be in this debate. And what the hell the president is going to say, I don't know, because we have not had that hearing, he is in an impossible position. If he responds in a positive way, he is going to set things in motion very fast. And of course, it's going to be heavily politicized. Now, it gets even more complicated because the other candidate, former President Trump, has actually spoke to the issue in somewhat ambiguous ways. You can interpret his interview with Logan Paul a number of ways. But nevertheless, he's kind of stepped into the issue just before the debate. And so if a question comes up, former President Trump can say, yo, I spoke to this. President Biden can't say that. And so again, this thing is getting really out of hand very, very quickly. And well, can we have a hearing in the next 8 days? I don't know. And so based upon the circumstances now, it looks to me that this issue, which I have desperately wanted to stay nonpartisan and be dealt with in a bipartisan way in order to help heal this country, which is coming apart at the seams for those that aren't paying attention, to not become a partisan political issue. But unfortunately, it looks like that's exactly what is going to happen. And you're going to have people on both sides of the aisle coming at each other with whatever attack they can put forward regarding whatever position they have on this issue. And that is going to make things a lot more difficult for the activist. Will it ultimately prevent disclosure? No, but it might delay it. It might diminish its power. I don't know. So that's the situation, Andy. In a few words, that's where we are right now. That is the scenario I am trying to deal with and navigate, and my colleagues as well, and the members on the Hill that want to move this issue forward, they're trying to deal with it, and the entire campaign staff for every member of Congress and the 33-some senators and the president is trying to deal with. I mean, it's pretty intense.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You know, I think I said, Steve, when we spoke last time and probably the time before that, I don't think anyone gives an overview quite like you can. So thank you for that. I want to ask then, you've mentioned the presidential debate coming up. It's on CNN, I believe, on the 27th of June. Mm-hmm. You mentioned, obviously, the New Paradigm Institute, Danny Sheehan's group he's heading up, calling for, in amongst the media hype around the election, to have the hashtag on social media, debate disclosure hashtag, try to get folks to tag Jake Tapper, Dana Bash, Joe Biden, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Donald Trump, mm-hmm. anyone who's involved in this, to get the UAP topic on their screen, on their radar, pardon the pun. Do you see UAP being mentioned in any way, shape or form in the debate? And I'll add to that, do you think there's a potential chance it's asked in a way that's damaging in the short term to the topic, i.e. we get a laughter track along in the background or the little green man comment again like we've had previously?
Great question. First of all, let me be clear. The New Paradigm Institute has been calling for hearings too, but given the situation, the presidential first debate, there's just no way that hearing's going to happen. And so they're doing, I think, the logical thing. They're saying, look, we're not going to get the hearings, but that means the issue must come up. And clearly, if it comes up, it's going to re-excite the situation and might trip a hearing, meaning, oh God, now it's in play, it's being discussed. It's, you know how many, a lot of people are going to watch that debate. Okay, a lot of people are going to watch that debate. I don't know what the number is going to be, but it's going to be in the tens of millions, I think. And so it might trigger the hearing, and that hearing happens pretty quickly. We might be able to get to some place before the thing gets out of control. So I'm totally okay with the fact that the New Paradigm Institute is doing that. But I also want to mention that for those that think, no, we can slide by it. And again, this is a message I'm sending to all those very high people of high rank and station with very big resumes, working on very high level projects and or high level of aides to high level members of Congress who work very, very hard and do not want to be scrutinized, who just simply don't deal with the internet. They don't go on it. They don't participate. They don't post. They stay away from it. They view it as a risky area. I get it. That means they don't understand it. They don't know about it. And I think that the DOD is really, that's really the case for the Department of Defense. I don't think it's, and the people running the Department of Defense, I don't think they know the internet at all, right? I mean, they probably think TikTok is a name for a clock company or something. But here's the deal. Logan Paul is not one of the biggest influencers on the internet. But he has a YouTube channel with 24 million subscribers. He has another channel, which is his Impolish program, with 5 million followers. All right. It's 13 million, I think, Twitter followers. And his videos have been seen probably in excess of 7 to 8 billion views. And so when Donald Trump sits down with Logan Paul, maybe Logan Paul doesn't impress the Secretary of Defense, but that message, his statements, everything he said about ET or related to ET is going to be seen by a huge number of people. And those in government that think, well, so what, are idiots and they need to wake up. There's an influencer out there named The Beast that has 273 million followers. Okay. And of course you got a lot of movie stars like celebrities like Taylor Swift. She has 95 million. And then plus they have multiple platforms. These sure. people are real. They could simply endorse a product on their social network platform. And within a week or two, that product will take off. That company will make a substantial amount of money. This is the world we live in. And those that are in government and feel very proud of how powerful they are and how many degrees they have and everything, they think the internet is simply a crazy place full of fools, then they are in for a very, very sharp, comeuppance. And so the fact that he gave that interview to Paul means this thing is in play amongst a generation of people who are absolutely critical to this election. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican, if you aren't aware and are not engaging the millennials and the Gen Zs, many of whom are coming of age, you have a major problem. And the Democrats, I think in particular, haven't gotten that yet. And boy, they better get it. Right. Whatever their desires are. But it's also the case with the Republican Party. And so, again, the situation is really, really tricky. In other words, the president is part of a long line of presidents going all the way back to Truman, who have known to one degree or another, at least the fundamental truth, that we're not alone. Every single one of them has known that. There were times when people said, well, this president didn't know, that president didn't know, because when they didn't say anything, and they're just not understanding what it means to be president of the United States. It doesn't mean that you'll be given an immediate tour of every underground facility and allowed to see everything that's going on. Not at all. You may get almost nothing, but will you be informed one way or another? Oh yeah, we're not alone. Now, what you want to do about that, Mr. President, I guess that's up to you, but we're not alone. Every single one of them has known that we're not alone. And they have chosen to deal with it pretty much by letting the Department of Defense do what they felt was the right thing to do. There have been some engagements of note. Jimmy Carter tried to engage it and quickly found out that the Department of Defense, what they wanted to do was not him not to do anything. And essentially, I guess they just blew him off. And then Bill Clinton, President Clinton, didn't want to, but circumstances brought him into play and he tried to engage it and the Department of Defense basically blew him off. So there have been a few attempts, but not too many, but they've all known. And that includes President Biden, who has been in government high level for decades. And so the idea that he, all these decades, but nobody tipped him off, and I can go on further, but he knows. And so the responsibility of informing the American people is his, or the next president, whoever that is. And so he has a huge national security responsibility here about an issue of unmeasurable importance. And so he's not in the same position as a candidate for president. So the candidate could answer anything he wants. They could say, well, I think they could be here, not here, right? I heard this, I heard that. I secretly attend UFO conferences and don't tell any, whatever. The candidate can say anything, but the president ask a question related to this, right, is in an extremely difficult position, right? Because he's intimately involved in the whole process itself and intimately and critical in terms of the ultimate resolution of it. It is not a good situation. I am dreading this debate.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Now, so much has been done. So much has happened on this issue. It is inconceivable to me that CNN, whose record on this subject is not good. I mean, it's simply not good. But that's true of almost all of the networks, with the exception of Fox News and News Nation. But your more, how would you say, liberal entities like CNN, MSNBC, their record on this thing is terrible. But I can't imagine that they're going to ignore this in this debate. So it's going to happen. And this is the dilemma. Did I answer your question? If I didn't, repeat it, but that's...
No, you did. And there's a few questions later from listeners I think will take us back down the road as well on that, Stephen, on different paths. I remember back when Trump was in the presidency, the last time, he's not got a next time yet, well, that remains to be seen, but when he was interviewed by his son, they leaned heavily on him asking about, was it Donald Jr.? I can't remember. I think it was the guy's name.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they leaned heavily on him asking about Roswell, and the question was a bit ham-fisted the way he asked it, but I thought Trump's answer, while managing to sidestep the question, was pretty reserved and not a bad way for a president to handle it who didn't want to discuss it. He essentially said, and correct me if I'm wrong, he doesn't necessarily believe in it himself, but he does trust in the servicemen and women of the US military and they should be listened to. So he managed to not poo-poo the question while absolving himself of any further comment and just said he had seen interesting things. And that was all he really said. But I thought that wasn't a bad way to answer that question.
There is no good way to answer that question. But as you may recall, during the campaign for that White House, that season, campaign season, which was 2015-16, 400 articles were written in various publications about the connection between the candidate, Secretary Clinton, and the ET UFO issue. And there's a lot of connection. Not only her, but John Podesta, their top advisor, her campaign chairman, and her husband, the president. And I take full responsibility for most of those articles. I mean, that was all I was doing, was trying to drive the media to cover that issue. And I had help from a absolute legend of a publicist in Washington, D.C. that knows everybody. And has dealt with every single media in that town. And so we generated those articles, which forced their camp. They wanted to kind of slide into the White House. So I think once she was in, she was going to hit this issue hard. That's another story. But they didn't want to deal with it in the campaign because campaigns in the United States are just totally risk averse. People are just not willing to take chances. And as a result, they limit tremendously their ability to be authentic. But nevertheless, she had no choice. And so she went on talk shows. Her husband went on talk shows. Obama went on talk shows. Podesta gave interviews about 11 times during that campaign, which just generated more media. In other words, kind of outed them. I meant no harm. It's a nonpartisan issue, but she had a connection to the issue. She's running for president. The American people should know everything that she knows or has done or said about the subject. So that was well in play. Now, Trump wins the election, so not surprisingly, there was going to be some carryover. But the amount of carryover is practically nothing. It was just the odd question here and an odd question there. And Trump did not really get into it at all, because I'm pretty sure he didn't want to. I do not think he knew much about this when he became president. I don't think he was told much about this. Did somebody that he trusted come to him and just privately say, you know, President Trump or Donald Trump, I don't know if you're interested in this, but that phenomenon, that's real, and we have company, don't know. But obviously that issue wasn't engaged. What he did do is shepherd the idea of a space force and help that happen. And it speculated there might be a connection between that and his awareness of a non-human presence. But they'd been wanting a space force for some time. And I assure you, there's a great deal of potential for war in space with our known adversaries. And so having a space force, you don't need to have ETs to have one of those. So it was minimal. And so now we're coming around again. And in the 4 years while he was not president, or almost 4 years, he did not engage the issue. Of course, he had a lot on his plate, a lot to deal with, too. So the situation is still incredibly asymmetric in terms of how these two candidates can deal with this. And if they underestimate the public's interest in this now, if they underestimate how social media has just set this issue on fire and how many people are ready to come forward and all of that, if they don't understand, if the White House campaign staff does not understand where this issue is, both in Congress and or in the public sector, and they don't respond to any question on this subject well, it's not going to go well. It's going to go very badly. And it's much more likely to go badly for the president, because he's president. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, the candidate that's not president, you know, the challenger, they pretty much say anything, and they do. Right. And it's like, okay, you know, you're trying to win. You're trying to win. The president is not just campaigning. The president is still the president. And so if you ask a question about anything important, it could be, what is your view of the fact that Vladimir Putin just, you know, created a non-aggression pact with North Korea? You know, remember the non-aggression pact the Soviet Union had with Germany? That didn't go well, all right? So it is that aggression pact with China. He's the president. So if asked a question like that, he has to respond as president and also as candidate. It is brutal. It's a tough gig, these debates. That's why they're not crazy about having them, all right? And so this is the dilemma that he faces. I have nothing but empathy for any person in that position. The truth embargo, as I have said many times over the last almost 30 years, is of such of a nature that it makes fools of everybody, including me, everybody. It makes a fool out of everybody. Members of Congress, the military, the American people, the activists, everybody. because a lie of that magnitude about something that important being maintained that long is going to make a fool out of everybody and put them in impossible positions. And this is just one more example, but this example is particularly significant. And it's one thing for the truth embargo to make a fool out of President Clinton back in 1993 and 4-5, or Carter in 77, 78. It's another thing for it to make a fool out of the president now under these circumstances with the world in this situation and this issue so close to being resolved. And so I repeat what I've said many times. I'm trying to get meetings. I'm trying to get in front of some of the media that used to bring me on years ago but doesn't, to be able to discuss this and try to provide this perspective. But nobody's calling. Well, except my podcast revolution friends, who I love dearly, and I will do a podcast on 5 minutes notice. They call. But the people that are really facing this problem are not interested in the advice of a poor political activist living, working in D.C.
Maybe not at the moment, but times change and things change quickly, Stephen. I want to ask you, you mentioned before Space Force, interesting sidebar, and the idea that there could be a conflict in space. I don't think that's the idea of sci-fi anymore. That very much is a reality. I would love to know maybe what has happened already in space we don't know about. You mentioned about war with known adversaries in space, let's say US, Russia, China. Right. Those are the three main ones. Yeah. Do you think there's anything at all, and this is speculative, to putting military equipment and personnel in space to fend off or defend against unknown adversaries or anything that may be non-human related?
That is all for part one. Part two will be out in the next couple of days. You can listen to this episode already in full, ad-free and with no sponsors for less than the price of a coffee. If you head on over to Patreon or Apple, you can subscribe to the podcast for less than the price of a coffee or take up the 2 weeks free trial that are available on those platforms. You can head on over to Spotify and search That UFO Podcast Premium and get access to this episode in full, no adverts, no sponsorships, and also with some extra bonus content as well. Thanks for listening, folks.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.